Hello, this is Brian Wampler with another episode of the Chasing Tone Podcast, the podcast about guitars, amps, effects, as well as a healthy dose of interesting off-topic discussions. Joining me today is Henning Pauly, famed YouTuber, gear lover, camera, gear collector, man of many talents. How you doing?
Yeah, God, there's so much wrong about what you just said. Hello, people listening to the podcast. Gear collector. I don't collect gear. I have the gear that people send me. Big difference.
I'm looking at you with like 30 guitars on your back wall.
Yeah, but I don't collect those. I make money showing them to people. There's a big difference between someone who actually takes their hard-earned money and drops it onto those kinds of guitars and someone who does that for a living, which is kind of the point of why we're talking.
Sure.
Because a lot of people think, oh, he's just like some trust fund boy who buys all this stuff and then shows it off.
People do think that. Yes, it's amazing that some actually do think that a lot of YouTubers are literally buying just gigantic amounts of gear. And we do buy gear, but that's not really how it works, is it?
it's pretty amazing. Like, people think, he buys all this stuff and then he brags with it on YouTube. And he makes a video daily with 10 4K cameras. So the idea is, I do this to brag, but they don't understand that it takes 12 hours a day of my work, including weekends and holidays. So when would I have the job that earns me the money to buy the gear? Also, if I did that and I work all day on those videos to show off the gear, when would I actually ever play it? Because I wouldn't.
Right.
I had Vanessa here, my intern for 3 months, and you know, she learned a lot, but she, as many people thought, well, we play guitar a lot. And every day I look over to her like, Vanessa, how much guitar have we played today? She's like, not at all. I'm like, yeah, exactly. Because playing guitar isn't part of being a guitar YouTuber, which is kind of weird.
It works very similarly with guitar pedals. Yeah, I don't generally play that much guitar. Oddly enough, you know, most of my days spent talking on the phone and looking at spreadsheets.
Well, yeah.
It's amazing.
I would say up until when I was a musician and I was teaching and all that, I slept in. I played some PlayStation, and then at like, you know, maybe 1, I moseyed on over to the music school. Now I get up at 7, and until about 1 or 2, it's phone calls, emails, YouTube comments, Facebook chats, all that stuff. Right now, the guy from Engel is calling me. Right now, Jürgen's calling. Sorry, Jürgen. Can't do it. It is a constant being on the phone, talking to companies, because you got to get the gear in to do the job. And then not just that, you also have to convince people like, you know, the beautiful Brian Wampler to pay you for the job.
You get paid for this?
I do get paid for this, yes. So it is a job. I'm not complaining. It's a great job. But there are days where it's a job like any other, and you have to do the spreadsheets, and you have to write the invoices, you have to do the negotiating, you have to figure out problems. I mean, there are days where you're on the phone with the company for 3 hours because you said something wrong about a product or whatever. I mean, it happens.
How did you actually get into doing YouTube videos? Like, I know you were a musician and a producer and a lot of things in that area, but how did you kind of transition into being a popular YouTuber?
Did you just do air quotes when you said popular?
Popular. That was supposed to be on YouTuber, because I actually don't like that term that much. But for lack of a better description.
Even worse, I'm an influencer.
Oh, that's right. You are an influencer.
Yes, that's what we are. You are an influencer. You just influence people to buy your shit. See, that's a big difference.
That is true, yes.
But you're doing it in a very informative and subtle way. Okay, so believe it or not, I didn't know too much about pedals. The story realistically is when I did all the albums, and for the people out there that don't know this, I did albums with James LeBrie from Dream Theater and Sebastian Bach and guys from Kansas. For a couple of years, I was like some hot dude in the progressive rock world. I recorded those with a pod. Yeah, Pod 2. Then Pod XT. That's all on all those albums. That's bad modeling.
Wow.
Interestingly, every review said amazing production. Not a single one said bad guitar tone. Because it's about the music. It's about the notes. Yeah. And for me, it was always about the notes. Yeah. So I never worried too much about the tone. It was when the notes were there, that's fine. And I moved back to Germany and the AD converter on the Pod XT broke. So I had to use my hot rod that I had. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, that's what they mean by tone. I mean, then I was like, okay, how can I get those lead sounds I usually had? And I bought a bunch of pedals. One possibly was, what's that thing? It's black. Boss makes it. It's a black pedal.
The Metal Zone.
Yeah, that one. So I bought the Metal Zone to get a good lead tone out of
which
my Fender
Hot Rod. Which you should. That makes sense. Perfect sense.
No, it doesn't. I think a Digitech Heavy Metal DS1.
Oh, yeah.
An SD1, which was a good idea if the amp had been driving already.
Right.
So I was looking for lead tone, and that's when I really bought my first pedals. And then I bought a used Soldano, and my problems were over when it comes to lead tone.
That's a pretty damn good amp.
Yeah. I bought the Hot Rod, and I bought it in purple. And it was modded with a clean channel, an actually really good clean channel. I bought it for $560.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me.
Yeah. But get this.
On one of the big, cost that much.
One of the big albums that I did when I was back in Germany, I needed those really beautiful kind of Steve Morsey kind of leads where everything really cuts, every note is right there. And the Soldano was perfect for it. But I tried my killer ant. Do you know what a killer ant is?
No,
It's a 1-watt amp from Blackheart that came out back then.
Oh, I have one of those. One knob, right?
One knob.
Yep, I have one of those, yeah.
1-watt amp, one knob, and that amp with an SD1 in front of it kills the Soldano.
No.
I kid you not. It is verbatim the Soldano tone, except that it's more defined on the attacks.
Okay, I swear, I have this amp in the bottom of my gear closet over here, and I have an SD1. I'm going to try this today.
Do it. You're going to be blown away because, of course, you have got to crank the amp and then push it a bit. And I'll send you the files and all the leads on that album. That little
awesome.
Amp with that, I mean, the amp was €120.
We'll be right back.
Is real music dying? What even is real music, and who are we to judge that? Well, my father is a lifelong musician, and together we've been making music for over a decade. In our new podcast, we dare to ask the urgent, the weird, and the deep questions, and we have a lot of wild stories to tell. No matter what genres you enjoy, whether you're a musician, a producer, or a listener, we invite you to discover unconventional perspectives on music. So tune in and go follow Mad Makings of Music wherever you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, they were really inexpensive. Yep. And I mean, at the time that those, Blackheart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they had several different models.
Yeah.
And at the time, at least here in America, that was kind of unheard of, like a tube amp for a couple $100.
I still have it. I had the 5, the 15. Both of those are gone, but I still have the 1, and I have the 100, which I recorded a whole classic rock album with. Great amps. But anyway, so a couple years later, I moved into this house, and because I wanted to get a little bit into chicken picking, I heard that the country people used compressors. I'm a dumbass. What do I know? So I looked it up. Well, what do we buy? You buy a Dynacomp. Red thing, two knobs. Right. So I ordered that at Thomann, and I had a little bit of money left, and I ordered two Harley Benton pedals, which are essentially Joyo pedals.
Okay.
The Ultimate Drive, which is a clone of the OCD.
The OCD, yep.
And then the American sound, which is some kind of amp in a box kind of a thing.
I think that's a Tech 21 yes. type of yeah. circuit, right?
Okay. And they arrived and they were like $29 each. And one of my students was here who was a brilliant guitar player. And we were like, oh my God, this is really good. I mean, really good based on we don't know too much. Okay. Right. But for $29, they're really good. And since I had produced many albums and I own a studio and I kind of still know how to get a decent sound, we put them into, I don't know, one, probably the hot rod. I had a webcam and I had some other camera, very simple. And we just did two little videos for these. I had zero idea about a culture of gear reviews on YouTube. I had no idea about the YouTube community doing this. I didn't even know these videos existed. What didn't exist were good videos for cheap China pedals. They were all videos with people with their phones because yeah. they bought them. No reviewer with their salt would go and do a high quality video of this. And what I did back then wasn't necessarily high quality, but the sound was there.
Right.
And those videos, people loved them. They had probably tens and tens or hundreds of clicks or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, that's
my channel had nothing on it. It had my dog peeing, literally. That's like, it was a private channel. And then I called up Toma and said, look, people really like those videos. Do you want me to do the rest of the pedals? And they sent me the rest of the pedals. So I started with the Joyo pedals. And I found out that there were Joyo, contacted Joyo. They sent me some. And when you're a beginning YouTuber, the most you can hope for is getting, as the Chinese call it, free samples of very inexpensive pedals. Because for them, one of those is about $5 to make at the most. And so they're buying advertising for $5.
Right. Right.
And but that's what you gotta do. You gotta find the interesting products that you can get your hands on. If I had called you up and said, hey Brian, I got 67 subs on YouTube, you know, you probably wouldn't have sent me a pedal.
Most likely not. We actually, I think I look at it a little bit differently because sometimes a person may have 100 subs, but those 100 subs are like really into it and love everything they do. And sometimes that's more important than 10,000 subs
yep.
and no one cares, you know.
Also important is what's the quality of what they do. Are these yep. some guy that, is he using camera audio? Or is he actually like, you know, miking? I mean, if it's a good video, realistically giving him a pedal for the video, it should be a no-brainer. Because we both know, I mean, it's a secret, we probably shouldn't say that, but you're not spending $200 on a pedal. So now, if you look at a small channel and they do a good job, you know, send the guy a pedal. Like Lee Fuge, for example. Mm-hmm. Lee's got a growing channel. He's got, what, 2,000 subs maybe 1,500. But brilliant videos, good stuff. And for you to invest whatever a pedal costs you is nothing yeah. for what he does.
Right. Yep.
So yeah, I did those videos and then did more and more. And what the most you can hope for is getting free samples and then maybe get a company that does cooler pedals, give you those. Mm-hmm. Went to Music Messe in Frankfurt and showed people on my iPad, you know, what I do. And then Søren from Carl Martin was one of the first more boutique higher-end builders who looked at it and said, that's great. And then he sent me three pedals when I had 3,800 subs.
Let me back up a yep. little bit. What year was this that you were like just making these first videos?
2013, yeah.
So for the past 7 years, mm-hmm. you've built this gigantic, monumental, I don't know what you would call it, castle
atrocity.
Full of gear. I mean, what is it? What is it like being a reviewer every day you're making videos or editing, you're doing something with guitar mm-hmm. stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure getting into it, you probably thought it would be a little bit different, maybe.
No, I thought nothing.
Really? So what is it like having to do this every day?
Well, you don't all of a sudden just do it. First, if you get into it thinking, I'm going to turn this into a job, I'm going to be YouTube influencer man and get money to, you know, blow my nose into a certain kind of handkerchief. Then it's not going to work because you're not doing it out of passion. You got to do it because you enjoy doing it, and that's it. Not because you think you get anything for free, not because you think it's going to turn into something. You just do it because you enjoy what you do. And I had students, I had bands I was producing, and so I slowly did that. But when the work got more, it made sense to do a little bit less teaching, and it slowly shifted over to more YouTube work and less normal paid work. And at the point where you see it is valuable, financially also valuable, so that you can support yourself in your family, it's obviously a motivation. You know, if you're doing it and nothing comes out of it, but A, the motivation is the viewers' positive comments, which I sometimes get some of. A lot of trolls, but sometimes people are nice.
Occasionally, right?
A video doing well, you know, hey, gets you through the day, and then all of a sudden you get to talk to people that you thought you'd never talk to. I'm friends with Phil X from freaking Bon Jovi, which is weird because Bon Jovi was like my favorite band ever, and now I'm friends with the guitar player because of what I do. So that, of course, gets you out of bed. And I have to say, since I started doing this, there hasn't been a single day where I open my eyes in the morning and I think, oh, damn it, I got to go and do this job. Never. I'm always happy to go in the studio. I mean, it's kind of cozy. Put your feet up, there's coffee, go through emails. The editing, is it fun? Not the most. Doing product shots, is it fun? Not that much. Actually, no individual job of it is like super, super, super exciting to me.
Right.
But none of it hurts. And actually, writing the music's fun. That's why I'm doing it. I'm a producer. So you're doing the produced tracks and all that. That, of course, is fun.
Right.
But I have days where I do product shots on a nice camera, on a slider, and then edit those. That's a totally different job than on another day where you're on the phone. Then on another day, you're doing the in front of camera actual reviews, which is if you do three or four in a row like I do, after that, your brain is wiped because you have to focus like crazy. My videos are long. Right. But you're not doing the same thing every day. There's a day where I film. There's a day where I edit. There's a day where I do a produced track. There's a day where I don't do any of that, where I do little things. So I think the variation in what you do is what makes you not stagnate or not get burnout.
Right. How do you think that reviews and the gear culture around YouTubers doing reviews, how do you think it's changed since you've started? I mean, I think of probably the first people I were aware of, Brett Kingman, Andy, of course, I mean, doing Pro Guitar Shop stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just completely different as to what makes a person really interested in a video now.
Yeah. When I started, there was Mike Hermans, Andy, Brett Kingman, Gearman Dude. They were the guys that I looked at and was like, okay, that's, you know, I'm getting some pointers from them. What do they do?
Right. Because you don't want to be just like them, of course.
No. You have to find your own thing.
Right.
The one that stood out was Anderton's. Because it wasn't matter of fact.
Yeah.
It was very clearly silly driven. It was character driven. And I don't even know if you want to call it demos or reviews, but that was a show around gear with two characters. Back then it was Lee and Rob Chapman that were enjoyable to watch. I remember they were doing the Mesa Boogie Mini Rectifier and they had like little Star Wars Lego figurines and they were like walking in front of it and like, oh my God, look at the giant amp. And they just had fun with it.
Right.
And it showed, that was an indicator that it doesn't have to be matter of factly about the product, but just be yourself. If you're not yourself, people say, oh, stop acting, stop trying to be funny. Oh, in real life, I'm not funny. That's the thing. In who I am in the videos, if you know me, and Brian, we've met a couple times, that's who I am. If I had to act in front of the camera, it would be very, not stressful, but demanding. It would be pressure. It would be pressure to not say the wrong thing. If I want to say fuck, I say fuck. You know, if I want to say something bad about Trump, okay, I'm going to lose some subs, but I will. I'm me. So take it or leave it. A lot of people leave it, but that's okay. And I think the thing that has changed is it's less fact-driven now. Mm-hmm. And the channels that got bigger are character-driven. Hmm. And that's a good thing, because you want to...
It becomes more about entertainment rather than showing just the pedal.
The word is very adequate in its infotainment. It's the information's, for me, the information's got to be there. The sound's got to be there. My playing's got to be good enough so you know what's going on. I sent my pedals into tons of amps. That's information that's valuable. But if all of that is presented in a very dry way, if I'm not the guy that you want to have coffee with, or I'm not the guy that you'd like to hang out with, then why in the world would you spend half an hour with me looking at a 3-knob pedal?
Right.
So people associate with me. They relate to me. And if they don't relate to me, they relate to Lee Anderton or you. I mean, if you were just matter-of-factly in your videos about filaments and transistors and I don't know what you're talking about, you know?
And non-inverting op-amps.
Yeah. Let's talk about gain stacking. Like, boring. But you're a character and you're enjoyable to watch. And some people have a watchability. Andy, for example. Andy Ferris.
Right.
Andy is... It doesn't matter what he does. Andy is just highly watchable. Andy's not the greatest guitar player in the world, and he doesn't have to be. Ryan Burke. Ryan's not the greatest guitar player in the world. He's adequate for what he wants to show, for the style of guitars and gear that he shows. And Ryan's a good guy because you just want to hang out with him.
Right.
And that's always what I tell people. What should I do when I get into YouTube? People watch because of people. Nobody watches because of the topic. And if the topic is something you're also interested in, then you have a winning combination. But let's take, for me, that's a guideline, Top Gear, when it was with Clarkson mm-hmm. and May and those guys. I don't care about cars or horsepower or brake something fluids. I literally do not care about cars. And I can't get enough of Top Gear because you just love the interaction between those guys. Hmm. And I have people watching my channel, which is flabbergasting. They don't play guitar. They found, and not just one. They found it somehow. I don't know how. And they started watching it. I have people that started playing guitar because they couldn't stop watching my channel because something about me made them click on the next video. And then all of a sudden they bought a beginner kit and said, I want to know more about this.
That's awesome.
It's ultra awesome. So I think that's how it has changed a bit. And you have a winning combination, if you ask me, if you have a character-driven format that's also has the information you want. That pedal show, those guys know what they're doing. The information is there, but if they weren't likable characters, it wouldn't work.
Right. Yeah. How would you recommend someone kind of find their voice or whatever you want to call this, their personality in front of the camera? Like how, I'm not even sure if I've even found it, honestly. It feels like it's always evolving sort of with me. I'm never 100% comfortable. I'm way more comfortable than I used to be, but it's still a little awkward sometimes. Takes me a bit to get into it.
I would say, look, if you're stupid in real life, then be stupid in front of the camera. Like I'm in front of the camera and a stupid pun pops in my head. One of those that really isn't funny and you shouldn't say it. And what do? I say it. Because it's like, I don't know. Oh, we got a low-pass filter. Jennifer Lopez. You know, that's stupid. And the thing is, I do it every time. Running gags, good idea. Because the people that watch your channel, if someone finds one of my videos and sees it for the first time, they're like, who's that idiot? And that happens all the time. If they don't make it past the first video, okay. But if they do 2, 3, 4, all of a sudden, they're getting the joke. They're getting that the animals are running into the shop. They're getting that I'm talking to Leslie, who's switching up there. They're becoming part of the family. See, it as a sitcom. You have to get to know the characters.
Right.
So the animals, characters. Everyone in the family, characters. My mom sometimes in the videos, characters. It's a sitcom, but it's a sitcom where we also have guitar gear. I mean, how cool is that? It's kind of television exactly for the kind of thing that I like to do, which is learn about guitars.
Right. Well, I know you work with a lot of different companies, so I'm trying to figure out the best way to phrase this question. This next question. Whenever you see other companies who do their own YouTube videos and maybe you think, I probably wouldn't do that. Do you ever give them advice on what you would do? Or I guess probably a better question is, what do you think those who make guitars, amps, pedals, whatever, what do you think they should do on their own YouTube channel? Do you
think that they should? That's a really good question.
I mean, like JHS, for example, has completely just done a wonderful job, you know, with YouTube stuff.
I have consulted with a couple of companies just lately. Lewitt asked me what to do, and I said, just make it people driven and be silly. You know, don't do it. Don't do microphone videos. Nobody cares about them. You know, do it in a funny way. What Josh has managed to do, which is blow up the channel big time, has two reasons, or maybe three. Where A, there is a fan base for JHS that he was already bringing to the table.
Sure.
B, he didn't try to figure out how to do it himself. He hired someone that's a good videographer. So as far as I understand, as he walks into the room and everything's done for him, which is how he has to do it because he's got to be the company man.
Right.
But the videos do look amazing. Great thumbnails, great videos. And most of all, amazing content, and you absolutely buy it from him that he's honest about this Behringer pedal is good. Not just so that he looks like, you know, the hero who will recommend an inexpensive pedal. He is absolutely not afraid to push the competition, to say this is good. And if he's got a Wampler pedal there that he believes is good, he will say this is a good pedal. He's so secure in the quality of his own product, which I have to admit is very good. I have never had a JHS pedal on the table that wasn't among the best in their category. No idea how he does it. So he knows that even recommending other pedals isn't going to cut into his sales.
Right.
And I think what he did is 1 in a million chance to pull off the believability, even though he's a brand.
Even though he's a what?
Even though he is a brand.
Oh, brand. I thought you said a brat.
No. Well, I don't know him that way. No idea.
I was going to say, he's a pretty good guy. He doesn't really come across very bratty to me.
No, I don't know. What I usually tell companies about their own channel is don't put a lot of effort into it. Because realistically, it's very easy not to be believable. It's a corporate channel.
Right.
I mean, you've pulled it off as well because your videos aren't about, look how cool Wampler pedals are. I mean, they appear in the videos, but that's because seem to have some around for some reason. But you do similar what Josh does. And how many subs do you have now?
I mean, I'm okay. I think it's 125 or something like that.
That's which is
insane. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. I mean, a lot of my content's pretty niched. You know what I mean? I mean, designing overdrive pedals. That's not something that a lot of guitar players really care about. I mean, if you're looking at the general audience of guitar players, you know, very few people walk into a guitar center and say, do you have any distortions that are non-inverting op amps, hard clipping to ground, maybe a variable low pass filter, anything like that? Like, people just don't do that, right? Oddly enough, that's what I'm interested in.
Well, obviously.
So that's what I talk about.
I mean, that sub count for a corporate channel is very amazing. I mean, the only way someone can usually get that is if you look at, for example, Mesa Boogie or Fender or whatever, if they bring in loads of artists, do artist sessions of sitting there, because Mesa Boogie would never get 100,000 subs for a channel just showing the amps.
Right.
So with artists, you can do it, but you haven't done that. You've done that purely with infotainment. So, you know, tip my hat to you. That's a big-ass number for a corporate channel. Let's say it's not a corporate channel. It's like
it is a brand channel.
Yeah, it isn't. So I usually say to companies, whatever you do, who's going to believe that everything is positive? Let's say Engel. Engel's doing a channel, videos on the Engel channel about the amps. Do you think the guys from Engel will go and tell you anything negative about their amps? No, they won't. They won't say, look, this amp is great and it's good for this, but you know what? Don't put a fuzz in front of it because the amp's going to eat it up, which is what the amps do. They're kick-ass amps. They're absolutely amazing, but then they're not going to – they're demos. They're not reviews. And I make a huge difference between a demo and a review. What I do is reviewing. It's not demoing. A demo will show you all the positive sides of the pedal or the product, which is fine. You get all the positive stuff, but it'll never mention, oh, would have been great if it had done this. It doesn't do this well. You know, don't turn that knob all the way up because that's crap. Doesn't mean the pedal's crap, but it, you know, careful, don't do this.
That will bring the suck on. Yeah. And there's that those settings on, I think, almost every piece of gear.
So, yeah.
I mean, there's always, there's downsides and upsides to everything, as you know.
It's also just about learning when you get the thing. You already know what not to do, which is fine.
Yeah.
And when you work with the right companies, doing a review is totally fine. It usually pushes the company to think about these things the next time around.
Right.
So I was distracted because I just got a text message saying, coming home with pizza. So, yay.
let's close it up with one more question.
I got to add something to something you said earlier.
Sure.
Which is, what has changed in the YouTube community and how videos are done? And I how do you say this in English? I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that before someone, let's not name the person, came up with bringing YouTubers together for events where they make videos together for several days.
Kind of a guitar convention of sorts?
Guitar YouTube convention, yes. Before that time, we all didn't talk to each other. Not because we hate each other, but we didn't know each other. It started between Robert Baker and I. Rob invited me to do something in a video, and he introduced me to some other people. And I went to NAMM several years in a row and tried to make friends with all these channels. And it's almost unthinkable, but now Ryan, Andy, Steve from Boston, Tone King, Jay Leonard, all the Brits, you know, I mean, all these people that were at I can say that, my events. We're now a tight-knit community. We talk to each other daily. We call each other, hey, has that company screwed you over? What the crap? They're not paying my bill. I'm like, oh, yeah, that takes a while. Just be, you know, it's all good.
Right.
We help each other out. I mean, the thing is, where can you go as a YouTuber and talk about cameras, thumbnails, upload schedules, YouTube problems? You can't go down to the butcher and say, hey, Linda, what aperture does your Sony have? You know, who do you talk to about this kind of stuff? Our daily work doesn't happen around us. So the only people we can talk to are other YouTubers that do exactly what we do. And the events have done that, and now we have ways of learning from each other.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, that has changed.
It's really an odd job if you think about it. That's something that I have a hard time is associating with maybe some of my other friends here locally who don't have a guitar pedal company and don't make a bunch of YouTube videos and don't do podcasts.
They have no idea what you're talking about. Zero.
Just don't understand. Yeah.
I mean, people, I got audited this year. So that was a funny 20 grand.
That sounds wonderful.
Yep. They're gone. So the auditor lady, I had to explain to her, like, what I do. I'm like, well, you would understand me as an influencer. And that means I review gear, guitar, amps and pedals and guitar things, music things, and I do get paid for that. And that's something I have no problem of, you know, for the people to know. I do get paid by brands. I don't get paid for every video. That would be nice. I'd love that. I always take your money, Brian.
I just have money laying around. I just throw it
at course. But, you know, sometimes, look, there's a, just like when I was a small YouTuber and people helped me out, there's a small DIY company just starting out. They have one pedal. I can't take what I take from you. You're a big, successful company.
Right. That makes sense.
So I say, what's your budget? And I always say, look, whatever you have, we'll figure it out. There's always a way to get a video done. So don't worry. When Fender calls, oh, I'll keep the damn guitar and I take the full price because Fender can afford it. And they love it. They love working with you. It's all great. But there's always a way to get a video done. But in the end, we get paid. And I had to explain that to her. I had to explain affiliate money to her, which is important for the people to understand. When you click on a link under these videos, we get a percentage of whatever you buy. And that can be, you know, good money if we do our job right. And then people say, and I really want to stress that, yeah, but if the company pays you and you get money from the sales, why would you say something negative? And there is a problem of some channels only being positive or omitting negative things. Then they demo. But if you review, then realistically, what I say has to be the truth. Because once a viewer finds out that they bought something and I omitted things, the channel's pointless. If I lose the viewers, then I can't take your money. Then I can't get the affiliate sales. So I'd rather be honest and disappoint the company and not make as many sales than lie to my viewers. The viewer comes first, because if I didn't have any viewers, you wouldn't talk to me.
That makes sense.
So the viewers come first, and that should be the highest credo of any channel. If I say something really bad about one of your pedals and we're no friends anymore, you know, then there will be other companies. But if I get found out as someone who lies in his videos, the viewers will go away completely. So companies can be replaced, viewers cannot.
Right. That's a good way to look at it. So one more question before we close up here. And we've kind of already touched on this a bit, but I'm trying to think of, you know, the person, they just started their YouTube channel, maybe during quarantine, you know, at home. And they thought, I'm going to make a YouTube channel and I'm going to talk about guitar stuff. I know, be yourself and that sort of thing, but would you recommend them starting out as making sort of reviews or demos, or would you say make it more of an infotainment, as you said? Or what kind of advice would you give to someone that's just getting started?
Always be yourself. Do what feels comfortable to you. Play the style that you're comfortable playing and make the video you'd want to see. And then if people flock to your channel and you get positive comments, then listen to those. Listen to the positive and the negative ones, unless they're trolly. Adjust the format up to the point where you can still be you. When people say, oh, you know, you're not funny. Well, okay, what do you want me to do? Sit here and just completely read from a script? what can I do about that? Okay, I'm not funny. Fine, go away. I can't change that. I'll still try to make the stupid jokes because that's me. So I would just say do what feels comfortable and never try to better yourself. It's weird to me that some people with huge channels, much, much bigger than mine, just use really crappy camera gear. Or have like one camera. I'm like, guy, you make 20 grand with your channel a month. Buy some cameras, you know? Hire, if you don't like it, that's fine. But you have the money to hire someone to do the whole job for you, which I don't. So do it in a good quality. Good audio quality. Voice quality is absolutely important. Get a shotgun mic or whatever you need to get the job done. Treat your room. Don't speak in a room that's all reverbery. We want to understand you right. Learn about processing on the voice, processing on the guitar, and camera stuff. I mean, it's weird, and you're going to laugh, Brian, but I'm not into cameras. You know?
What?
I mean, I have like over 30. And I just dropped $12,000 on a new one. But
you're not into cameras. That makes perfect sense.
But these are it doesn't make me like giddy because it's the stuff I need to have to do the job. So I have a camera for going outside, going, you know, NAM and all that stuff, which has XLR in and can big batteries and can hold a lot of data and all that stuff. Like a reporter camera. That's important. I wouldn't want to do that with a DSLR. Why? Because I've tried. But then here at home, I need at least one camera that's got good autofocus and wide angle. And then I've got all these other cameras that are remote controllable and you can't even record on them because this is a TV studio and so on and so on. So you'll have to get into that kind of stuff. But do the job well. If you do the job well, people will appreciate it and people will come.
Yeah, where can people find you? Where do you prefer them to find you? Your YouTube channel or
not?
Facebook?
I prefer them to leave me alone. That's what I prefer. Go away. I would prefer them to follow me on Instagram because you see loads of table corners on Instagram, and I'm trolling people on Instagram. It's not actual content, but it's fun. But here's the thing. You as a brand now look at Instagram.
Right.
I can't necessarily monetize that yet. I'm close to 10,000 followers. But once, let's say I had 50,000 followers on Instagram, then my Instagram post of the pedal that just arrived is also worth something to you. Mm-hmm. I started charging on my YouTube channel when I had 30,000 subs. I said, okay, now this is actually worth something. So I started charging, I think, $250 a video, which isn't a total joke. So if I have, I don't know, 20,000 followers on Instagram, I would say to myself, oh, that is now worth something. If you get another 1,000 eyes on the pedal, I can charge Brian another, I don't know, $50. And that's $50, so I'm good with that. And Brian's happy to pay that. Right, Brian?
just whatever. I'll just leave a check blank. You'd fill in the amount. Yeah, that's the way I like to do it.
Instagram, I would love if you followed me there. But obviously on my YouTube channel, which is a very weird spelling of my initials, HP42, because the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, that's, of course, the meaning of life, the universe and everything. But actually, if you type in HP42, the letters H and P, and then 42, my channel comes up.
So wonderful.
That's how you find me. And the thing is, anyone listening to this, why the frick haven't you subscribed already? I mean, if any of you haven't subscribed, I'm going to track you down. I'm going to hunt you down. I'm going to find you people. I'm going to have coffee with you.
Well, thank you for listening to the Chasing Tone podcast. As always, if you have any comments, questions, or concerns, you can email podcast@wamplerpedals.com, and I'll personally get your email. If you like this podcast, make sure to share it with your friends, bandmates, and others into guitar podcast. If you'd like to show your support for the show, the simplest and free way to do that is just to share it with a friend and maybe leave a review and a rating on Apple Podcasts. Also, make sure to watch Henning's videos. I'll post a link in the description here.
Yeah, to everyone, but Brian's reading this, by the way. He's totally reading this.
Every time. Yep. And make sure you check out wamplerpedals.com for blogs, videos, and of course to look at our beautiful, amazing pedals.
Plexi Drive Mini. That's the one to get. I'm just letting you know. I'm not getting paid for saying this.
Not yet. Thanks for joining me, Henning.
You're welcome. Thanks, Brian. Bye, everyone.